Welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. I'm Alexander Chester. With me is always Akiva Wienerker. Akiva, how are you today?
I'm great. You know, I feel like we don't talk enough, Chester.
Yeah, well, you know, we're starting the second half.
We have a doubleheader in the state of Missouri today as we start with the 16th-ranked St. Louis Rams, and then we're going to head about 200 miles west on Route I-70 to Arrowhead Stadium to the 15th-ranked Kansas City Chiefs. But you know, Akiva,
I think the biggest critique we've gotten from the first 16 episodes is people saying that they need to hear more of Akiva and Alex. And, you know, they like the guests, but they want to hear more of us. So apparently, we don't talk enough. I don't talk enough. I've never heard that before.
The biggest critique we've gotten is from both of our wives saying, stop this podcast now or we're both going to divorce
you. Yeah, that's a more honest and accurate.
Yeah, there's no joking. Like, I don't know if my wife fully realizes, like, hopefully she thinks there's only like 15 teams in the NFL. Nobody tell her.
Well, what we haven't told her yet is that after this, in October, we have to do double team because we got to do that 30 fans in 30 days for the NBA and then for the NHL as well.
Oh, I mean, I would do an NBA one of these if people are actually listening to this, but NHL, my fantasy, the last time I did fantasy hockey, my team name was like 11th favorite sport or something like that.
Should we also do like the all 311 Division I college basketball programs?
Listen, if... It's a good idea.
Joining us today to talk about Stephen
Texas
F. Austin.
Presbyterians.
I named a school that actually exists, though.
Grambling versus Southern. Who is better?
Yeah, but that's not Division I, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
In basketball, it is, yeah. They're terrible, but yes.
Well, those are all those HCBUs.
And it's not 311 anymore. It's like 360, Chester. Oh, it would be long.
I'm way off. Well, look, I've long advocated that I think that March Madness should be expanded.
To every team?
Well, I think at least to 256.
Totally.
Like, you know, what's the downside?
Can you imagine, Joe Lunardi trying to, figure out, who's doing, who's number 255?
I think the only reason they don't do it is because you couldn't fit it on a piece of paper in terms of filling out a bracket.
It's true. It would really hurt gambling.
But who's doing brackets on paper in 2015 anyway?
I don't know. But now, even ESPN, their system for doing the brackets is kind of garbage. Like, it's very low, technology. So I wouldn't want to see what they come up with for 256. But I'm there.
Yeah, I think you guys heard my rant about how there should be a seventh team in the playoffs in the NFL. This one is even more of a no-brainer for a number of reasons. First of all...
No, this is definitely a brainer. There's definitely a counter-argument.
Here's my argument. All a coach wants is to make the tournament, right? You make the tournament, it's a feather in your cap, it helps you keep your job. So the more teams that make the tournament, the better it is for coaches. That's number one. Number two, one of the most endearing things about March Madness is the fact that there's crazy upsets that little teams...
But a 16 seed has never beaten a 1, so why is a 32 seed or a 64 seed going to beat a 1?
Well, the 64 seed is not going to beat the 1. But maybe a 59 seed is going to beat a 5, right?
I mean, oh my gosh, this is so hard to figure out.
What was I off with 59 and 5? So here's the other one. You know, in England they have the FA Cup. They have a cup where every team in every division can play each other, and I'm sure other countries do the same. And for a team in one of the lower divisions to beat a team in one of the higher divisions, it doesn't happen all the time. And I realize that soccer, because it's a higher variant sport with so few goals scored, there's more likely to be an upset. But the excitement level there would be for some random team you never heard of to advance, I just think it'd be more exciting. Plus, March Madness is 3 weeks right now. If you expand it to 256 teams, that's 4 weeks. So we add.
Oh, so you get the full March.
Yeah, we add a fourth weekend.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I don't think.
By the way, we're talking about college basketball right now, not even college football.
Oh yeah. This is a it's an NFL podcast. Oh yeah, that's
yes.
Right. But how did we get on this?
I have no idea. Well, but we're going to talk Rams. What do you think about the Rams?
So, you know, it's funny because I ranked the Rams 15th, you ranked the Rams 17th, so we averaged them out at 16. And now I'm not really sure why I did that. I think that they're, you know, the teams that we have them collectively above include the Vikings, which I think that's definitely wrong. The Panthers, which in terms of power rankings, maybe it's accurate, but in terms of relevance, it's not just because the Panthers' division is so much weaker. You know, the Panthers,
right.
The Panthers are going to
be... And they have a better quarterback, obviously.
Yeah, and then we have the Lions next. You know, the Lions coming off an 11-5 season. I'm surprised to see the Lions blow the Rams. The Dolphins, we've heard all about your Ryan Tannehill love. We have them below the Rams, so I'm surprised that we have the Rams this high. The Rams, to me, are actually somewhat similar to the Buffalo Bills, with the exception being that the Bills actually had a good season last year, whereas the Rams went 6-10. But both teams have a good defense. The Rams obviously have a great defensive line, but they have questions on offense. Now, the Rams, hopefully, their offense will be better than Buffalo's. But Nick Foles.
Well, why don't you just do everything about the Rams? We don't even need the guy for the podcast.
Yeah, that's true. I just think we ranked the Rams too high.
Okay. We ranked them 16. Like, that's not great or bad. It's literally in the middle.
Yeah, but they went 6-10 last year.
Yeah, so. The problem with the Rams is that, I mean, yes, the Niners are kind of out of that division in terms of being contender, but the Cardinals are really good, and obviously the Seahawks are the Seahawks, so they're in a really bad spot. Like, best case scenario, they go 10-6, and they're fighting for that sixth seed. My theory is that the Rams should slip Goodell. Goodell at this point is probably susceptible to bribes, right? Like, the Rams should slip Goodell.
But he's susceptible to very big bribes. He's making $45 million a year.
Yeah, so $20 million.
I think he's going to need more than
It'll
that.
It'll be worth it.
All right, let's hear it.
And they get to, they switch with the Saints into the NFC South.
So St. Louis, which is north and west of New Orleans. Well, actually, it's not west, but it's north.
I mean, you want to make like a three-way trade? I'll send your Vikings that west if you don't stop making fun of this.
Well, I guess the only other caveat about this is what happens when the Rams move to L.A.? They're still in the South?
All right, so clearly this would be part of a deal. This is like a double-sided deal here. You know, Kroenke is giving him $20 million. Goodell is, you know, doing something for Kroenke. I'm not sure what. Like,
well, what Kroenke wants to do is move to L.A., so.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, this is not a foolproof plan. This is like why we do this intro. We try and work things out here.
Yeah.
But if the point is, if the Rams could move to the NFC South, realistically, they're the most talented team in the division. They don't have a good quarterback like the other teams, but they would certainly contend if they could get anything out of Nick Foles.
Yeah, I think you know, I don't know if they're the best team in the division, but they would certainly be competing with Carolina,
totally,
New Orleans, and Atlanta. And Tampa Bay, you know, we had a couple of days ago, we had our, or I guess it was last week by now, we had our Bears podcast. And our Bears guest, Ari Gleicher, he actually thinks the Tampa Bay Bucks are going to win that NFC South, which says more about how bad the NFC South is than it does about the Bucks, I think.
Yeah, I guess. Or I don't know. The Bucks are terrible.
All right. I feel bad for our guest because by the time he comes on the podcast, everyone will have dropped off. So let's bring him on. So joining us now is Jordan Roos to talk about the Rams. Jordan, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
I am good. So this is our 16th ranked St. Louis Rams. We think, or collectively, Akiva and I, have the Rams above a number of NFC contenders. The Vikings, the Panthers, the Lions, the Saints.
Well, just say NFC teams. I don't think you, the contender, I don't know about.
It's a strong take. You know, all of those teams have had playoff success much, much more recently than the Rams. The Rams have gotten worse each of the 3 years under Jeff Fisher. Last year, they dropped to 6-10. But yet, we think of them as a contender for some reason. Yesterday, Akiva and I recorded our halftime between Team 17 and 16, our halftime podcast, ranking the 32 quarterbacks. And in passing, while discussing your quarterback, who we'll get to, Akiva said that the Rams are, quote, a very good team, good enough that he thinks that Nick Foles could manage them deep into the playoffs. But, you know, this is a team that hasn't had a winning record since 2003, which is actually shocking when I looked that up. In fact, they've had only 4 winning seasons in the last 25 years. So are we too high on the Rams?
Well, with the Rams, it's basically the same story every year. We look scary. We look good. We look like we're going to be contenders finally this year. And then, you know, it just doesn't pan out, especially the last couple of years when we've been relying on two of the worst quarterbacks that were forced into starting positions. Last year, obviously, Austin Davis and Sean Hill took the entire season between the two of them, with Sam Bradford going down in the preseason. Really, when you look at it, the Rams, they have a shot once again this year. It looks like our defense is going to be good, but, you know, I thought the same thing last year. And you look at the first 6 games that the Rams had, and they couldn't pull anything off. I mean, we were one of the worst defenses through the first 6 games, and that really hurt us. So really, when you look at it, it's just the same as the past few years. We look like contenders early, and we'll have to see what actually happens when the season starts.
Is Jeff Fisher's job on the line? Does he need to make the playoffs to keep his job?
You know, Jeff Fisher is really, really an interesting case study when you look at him, because pretty much every year after the first few years of coaching, he's always good at being a very middling coach. He's great at getting teams to about 8-8. But then when you you think he's on, you know, his last year, if he doesn't pull it off, he always seems to talk himself into another year. Like when he was coaching the Titans, he had 3 very mediocre years. Everyone thought it was his last year. They gave him one more chance, and he ended up bringing him to the Super Bowl that year.
Sounds like someone read that Bill Barnwell article.
Yes, just recently.
Indeed. So let's talk about, you know, the biggest offseason news.
Start from Nick Foles, I guess. First of all, were you happy with the trade?
I was really happy with the trade. You know, just like what most people think, Sam Bradford probably has a higher ceiling, but we're never going to realize it if he's not on the field. And while Nick Foles does also have his struggles with being in there for a full season, his injuries are typically a little more minor than Bradford's, you know, two ACL tears in a row. It's a little bit worrisome. So I think that if we can keep him in this whole season, which is a big question mark, to be fair, I think that it was probably one of the better trades in the offseason in general, especially when you throw those two draft picks on top of it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. This is something that Akiva and I discussed in our quarterbacks podcast as well. I think the general consensus before the trade was that Nick Foles had a higher value in the league than Sam Bradford. And when news came that there was a pick being swapped, I think most people initially assumed that it was going the other direction. Once you found out it was coming to the Rams, which meant that Chip Kelly apparently valued Bradford much higher than Foles, did that surprise people did that surprise Rams fans?
Yeah, I think we were all pretty surprised. I mean, Nick Foles, you know, he had just been coming off kind of an off year after his 27-2 year. So I think that when we saw that pick, I mean, being traded before it was known who it was actually going to, we all just kind of assumed it was going to the Eagles because Sam Bradford being, you know, previously having two very good years when he was able to stay healthy, and then as well as being a first-round pick once upon a time, I think we all just kind of assumed that the pick was getting swapped to the Eagles. And once we saw it was coming to the Rams, there was actually quite a few people arguing, I remember, because it was kind of a rumor at the time, and there was so many people saying that there's absolutely no way that it's going to be coming to the Rams. And then when it was clarified, yeah, there was definitely some surprise there. Yeah,
the one thing about Foles is, you know, sometimes staying healthy, they say, is a skill. But if you also remember, you know, Matthew Stafford's nickname used to be Matthew Stafford if he stays healthy. And he's basically played five straight seasons. So, like you said, they could be more fluky injuries. And, you know, Sam Bradford is clearly somebody who cannot stay healthy. But I need to see at least one more injury from Foles before we totally write off his health, right?
Well, one thing,
yeah,
that,
exactly.
One thing that Bill Barnwell pointed out is that Foles gets hit more than just about any quarterback in the league. And that was in Philadelphia, where they have a great offensive line, you know, because Foles holds on to the ball so long. And we'll turn to the Rams' offensive line in a little while, but their line is much weaker than Philadelphia's is, certainly. And so I think that some of those injury concerns are valid. I guess my other question about Foles is he's a down-the-field thrower, and I assume the Rams are going to go with a more conservative offense. Their wide receivers aren't as good as what Foles had in Philadelphia, and they've just invested heavily in Todd Gurley at the top of the draft. So, but you know, Nick Foles is a guy whose completion percentage was under 60% last year. So is he the right type of quarterback for the offense that Jeff Fisher wants to run?
It's at this point in time, it's really hard to say because I mean, the offense that Chip Kelly ran and Andy Reid ran, I mean, they're so different than anything that Fisher has tried to run because we're more about, like the, like you said, the ground and pound and then some conservative throws in there. Looking at the preseason game, I mean, we were able to see Nick Foles throw a nice pass to Lance Kendricks down the field. But he also showed that he's able to do kind of those short passes with that nice 35-yard run from Tavon after catching the ball.
And, you know, Sean Mannion, I see, is he's the backup. And you guys drafted him in the third round. So is there any – obviously Foles has a starting job. There's no quarterback controversy. But is there sort of a contingent of Rams fans who are already sort of like, oh, we want to see what Mannion has, the room for him, or is he more of a long-term project?
Well, I think that we all kind of realize that Mannion is more of a long-term project. He was kind of one of the middle prospects, you know, for quarterbacks in this past draft. He has a lot of work to do, and I mean, we saw that in the preseason game as well. But honestly, from what we've seen, and one preseason game obviously doesn't matter, but from what we've seen, it's all pretty much, we kind of are in agreement that he looked a lot better than both Case Keenum and Austin Davis.
Well, I mean, that just means like he, you know, he should still be in the NFL, because if he couldn't beat out Austin Davis, then I'm not so sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
All right, so turning to the wide receivers, Foles is going to have to find some of them. You know, it's worth saying that the entire Rams offense doesn't have to have a single player. Just looking at Pro Football Focus, they don't have a single player even listed as good, let alone elite or high quality. not shockingly, everybody's average or below average, with the exception of the left tackle, who's poor. Or not. There's a lot of not enough infos, to be fair. And obviously, it's a young team with a lot of rookies too that you know you can't possibly have a grade for. Yeah. So moving to the wide receivers, Jordan, I was wondering. You know, there's not a single player on the Rams offense who's listed as on Pro Football Focus as elite, high quality, or even good. Every single player on the offense is average or below average, and even if you expand it to the whole team, there's five players on the defensive line that are elite, high quality, or good, but they don't have a player outside the defensive line on the entire team listed as good. But starting with the wideouts and the tight ends, is there anybody you see here having a breakout year, or you know, someone who could really be a difference maker, or even like collectively, can this be, assuming Foles is 2013 Foles, like is there an even enough talent for that to be feasible?
Well, when you look at Brian Quick's year last year that he was having, he was on track for 1,000 yards, which we haven't had a wide receiver reach 1,000 yards since Bulger was at the helm. So, I mean, it's years ago now. So I think if Brian Quick is able to rebound from his really bad shoulder injury, and if Britt can continue to step up like he did towards the second half of the season, I think that we have a chance, you know, and you also, when you look at, I mean, the wide receivers and the tight end stats, you have to think about who's been throwing to them the past year and a half. We haven't had Bradford take a regular season snap since mid-season last year. When you look at a tight end like Kendricks, he was also making a lot of drops. And Jared Cook, he'll make a lot of spectacular catches and then drop an easy one in the end zone. We saw him drop another one in the end zone during the preseason game. But I think that as long as Brian Quick is able to keep himself healthy and rebound from his injury, maybe Stedman Bailey can jump in and Kenny Britt retains the leadership that he kind of had, and Foles is able to use them appropriately, I really think we have a shot. And that's not even looking at the fact that perhaps our new offensive coordinator, he may be able to use Tavon Austin in ways other than just trying to run him up the gut.
And I think their most dynamic playmaker, or the hope is anyway, is going to be Todd Gurley, the number 10 draft pick. The biggest concern there obviously is the fact that he's coming off a torn ACL, and when will he be ready to play?
Yeah, exactly. And it's already been confirmed that he's not going to take any preseason snaps. I think most reports are it's looking like he's going to maybe come back around week three or week four.
And although the truth is, Trey Mason looked pretty good last year, and the offense was still really bad, and I guess that'll transition to what seems to be the biggest hole on an offense with a lot of them, and that's the offensive line. You lost four of the five starters from last season's offensive line, both tackles. Is this a line that's going to be better this year, or is it just it's too hard to tell because you're relying on a couple of rookies to start on the left side?
It is really hard to tell, but it's also easy to say, can it really get much worse than last year? we let through, like you said, I mean, Foles, he got hit quite a bit with the Eagles. He's going to be seeing quite a lot more of that on the Rams, especially with Roger Saffold. He is kind of our veteran anchor, and I mean, five snaps into the preseason game, he was injured, and we had to bring in Garrett Washington, who was more than happy to let pressure through almost every single play. From what we've seen in the preseason game, I know that obviously Robinson was going up against Khalil Mack, so that's going to kind of skew it a little bit. Robinson and Saffold's side was actually letting a lot more pressure through than Havenstein and Brown's side, which was kind of nice to see them be able to keep up. But it'll be interesting to see if they can keep up when we're playing against, a team with more pass rushers than just Khalil Mack.
All right, so Jordan, switching tacks to, you know, a brighter note and the Rams defense. So like you said, the first six games last year, the Rams defense, I think they only had one sack collectively. They were playing really poorly. And then they turned it on and, you know, basically became one of the best units in the league. So what happened those first six games versus the last 10? How they turn it on, and are you expecting more of, you know, an inconsistent team like last year, where like a little bit of the first six, a little bit of the last 10, or is what we saw the last couple months last season what we're going to see the whole 2015?
Well, unfortunately, if you've been watching the Rams for, the past 10 years, you know that it's pretty much perennial that we're going to start out slow. We did definitely start out slower than everyone kind of expected last year. But you do have to remember we were also learning a completely new defense under our new defensive coordinator. So hopefully they're able to put it all together right off the bat, especially facing the Seahawks right away. Really, when you look at it, I think that if we can keep Chris Long healthy, you know, he went out week one last year, and he's a really big part of that defensive line. He's kind of the veteran anchor there as well. As long as we can keep him in, then maybe we'll be able to come out a little bit stronger than we did last year. But unfortunately, when you look at it, there's not a whole lot of correlation between teams putting it together halfway through the season, being able to continue that production at the beginning of the next season.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, because, yeah, the idea of momentum doesn't really exist. Although I think the Rams lost their last three games last year, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, so if they had any momentum in let's say, November, it obviously dissipated by December anyway. I guess the question I have about the defense is, look, the defensive line, as Akiva said, is stacked. You know, you added... You have Rookie of the Year Aaron Donald. You have Robert Quinn, of course, who's one of the best players in the league. Chris Long is coming back. They added Nick Fairley as depth. But behind that front four, the defense gets a lot worse really quickly. The secondary is weak. I think the linebackers might even be worse. What do you see among the linebackers in the secondary as room for improvement, or do you think they're going to struggle there as well?
Well, James Laurinaitis has always been a pretty good anchor for us at middle linebacker. Alec Ogletree has been kind of coming into his own lately. And then we also brought in Akeem Ayers, who hopefully will kind of fill in the spot better than Jolon Dunbar has been able to. Secondary, you know, a lot of people are pretty big on our secondary. They like to tout, you know, the nice pick sixes by Janoris Jenkins. Personally, I think that Janoris Jenkins is one of the worst starting cornerbacks in the league. He struggles to keep up with his man. He tries to be a playmaker, which when he's able to successfully do it, it's great. But when you see how many big touchdowns we let, you know, especially in that last drive in the second half from other teams, it's almost always Janoris Jenkins' fault. And then with Trumaine Johnson, I mean, he looked great in the preseason game. He had that really nice interception. He's a little bit more solid than Janoris Jenkins, in my opinion. But really, the biggest disappointment already is that we lost E.J. Gaines for the year. And he was our sixth-round draft pick last year. He came out. He looked absolutely fantastic. I think we were all really excited to see him. And as you know, he got injured in the one of the first practices. It looks like it's a foot issue. His metatarsal was separated from his tarsal, and he's done for the season. So in my opinion, he was probably the best cornerback we actually had on our team, and now he's already gone.
Yeah, and I guess ultimately the hope is that if you have such a good defensive line, especially with a Greg Williams defense that's blitzing all the time, hopefully the secondary won't have to cover the receivers for too long before the quarterback gets hit.
Absolutely, that's the hope, but especially in those first six games last year, it didn't pan out for us. So hopefully we're able to get that going right off the bat this coming year.
So Jordan, big picture than roster stuff. You don't live in St. Louis, correct?
That is correct.
So, but obviously the main thing, big picture that's surrounding this team is the inevitable, eventual, possible move out of St. Louis, which I know any Rams fan that I know is really, that's all they're talking about. To the point where the last time we did something like this, the person I had, we had to do the Rams, I don't even think he'd be interested now. Like, the people who actually live in St. Louis are so hesitant to sort of put their heart behind this team, you know, fearing that the Crankies are going to move it away, you know, the first chance they get to go to L.A. So as someone who roots for the Rams but doesn't live in St. Louis, what's your perspective on this?
Well, you know, I'm only 22 years old, so by the time I remember things, I mean, they've always been the St. Louis Rams to me. I think that right now, a lot of people are very reactionary. I mean, they're being told that the team that they love and they follow is being completely moved. So I mean, even though I don't live in St. Louis, I mean, I hate the thought of that. They've always been the St. Louis Rams for me, but I also know that, you know, there's a lot of people in Los Angeles who had them taken away from them, what was that, about 25 years ago now?
Wasn't it 1995? You're a youth, but I remember the LA Rams.
Yeah, Yeah, so in 1995, I mean, there was a lot of people upset about that. And I think, you know, a lot of people say people weren't as upset, but there wasn't as much global communication in 1995 either. I think that there were plenty of people who were just as upset then. So, I mean, it's not really easy to think about, hey, we're going to be moving. You know, we're finally looking like we might be on the upswing, and now we're gone. But at the same time, I mean, when they move, they're still the same team that I've been following my entire life. So, I mean, I'm going to stick with them through it.
So, yeah, that's – and one interesting part of it is the fact that they're moving back to the city they came from. Now, I don't think that Stan Kroenke cares about that. I think he just sees Los Angeles as a huge market where he can make a lot of money. It does change that dynamic a little bit, the fact that they're moving back to their original hometown. I can say I'm a Vikings fan, and if they moved to Los Angeles, I wouldn't support them anymore, or at least I would like to think I wouldn't. But let's turn to the schedule now. As Akiva said, you mentioned the fact that they start out slow every year. They started out slow last year. They were 1-4 last year, which essentially ended their season by early October. And this year, you have a brutal early schedule, especially with Todd Gurley out. So let's go through the schedule and see if you think they can get out to a better start and keep themselves in the playoff race longer, or if it's going to be an uphill climb again this year. Week one, you start at home against the Seattle Seahawks. It doesn't get much more difficult than that.
Yeah, so we always play the Seahawks really hard at home. What the telling factor here is going to be whether we're able to start off strong. If our defensive line is able to start off strong and we're able to get through that offensive line, which is really the weak part of that Seahawks offense, I really think we can pull off the win there.
Okay. So that's going to be a big upset you're predicting in week one then.
Yes, and that's only because, you know, we have almost always beat the Seahawks at home under Fisher, and I really think that we can pull that one off as well to start our season off right.
Yeah, I mean, they beat them last year with Austin Davis, right?
Yeah, but exactly. Last year in week one, and I know this is a Vikings fan, the Vikings went into St. Louis and destroyed them by 4 touchdowns. And this is before, you know, this is before the Vikings had Bridgewater or just about anybody that they would have get.
Yeah, that's probably, in hindsight, it's one of the 5 weirdest results from last year.
It is also
the Vikings
were able to play with
Vikings
Peterson.
The Vikings were better
though
than St. Louis all of last year, though, so why was that so weird?
Well, it was – who was their quarterback in that game, the Vikings?
It was Castle, I think. But he also had a good game against, I think it was Pittsburgh in London or something. Peterson played. He didn't play all that well. All right, this isn't a Vikings podcast. Okay, so you see a big upset in week one, and as you said, it would be the second year in a row that they beat Seattle at home. Then they go to Washington.
Following in Rams tradition these past few years, I believe that we will drop this game to the Redskins, and I believe that we will lose it.
All right, then you come back home, another tough home game, this one against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And I think we lose this one as well because this is right when they get Le'Veon Bell back, and I think that he's going to come in with a vengeance and absolutely tear us apart.
All right, so a big week one win against Seattle. Everyone's talking about, you know, the Rams are for real this year, even without Todd Gurley. Then they have a couple of tough losses, and now they go on the road, a really tough road swing. First, you go play Arizona.
So with Arizona, I believe that we will probably lose to them as well. Both Arizona games last year, we dropped them. Austin Davis is really to blame for one of them, but we got outplayed by the Arizona in both games last year.
All right, so now you're trying to desperately avoid that 1-4 start again for the second season, but you have to go to Green Bay to face possibly the best team in the NFL in the Packers.
Yep, and once again, I think that we lose. I think that unless we can pull off a Denver Broncos situation here like we did last year, I don't see really any chance of us beating the Packers.
So you get the early bye, which will probably be much needed. I'm sure, you know, Fisher's name will be slung around the media and Jay Glazer will be reporting that, you know, Chris Long punched somebody in the face or something. And, well, he wouldn't report that, actually, because that's his son's that's his friend's son. But anyway, so you're 1-4 at that point, and the season isn't totally over because the schedule really opens up. So you guys host the Browns and the Niners in back-to-back weeks. What do you think about those games?
I think we should be able to beat the Browns. We come back from home. We're 1-4, and this is about the time last year that we finally kind of put it together. So I think facing the Browns at home is going to be a pretty big game for us to finally get back on track.
And the Niners the next week?
I think we beat the 49ers. It's going to be this. I predict this is going to be a pretty tough year for them, just like everyone else, with all of their huge losses this offseason.
Who's the Rams' biggest rival?
The Rams' biggest rival? It would depend on who you ask. I would definitely be in the boat of the 49ers, just because, you know, when we played in L.A., they were pretty close to us as well, so I know that a lot of people already didn't like them then. And it's kind of become a pretty bitter divisional rivalry now. Obviously, the other would be possibly the Seahawks. It completely depends on who you ask. I don't really know anyone who thinks that the Cardinals are our biggest rival.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right, so you guys are 3-4. Another sign of – I wonder if you feel this as a fan of the team, because sometimes fans don't have great perspective on how their team is perceived, but – the fact that you guys have 13, I think, 1 o'clock games, you know, basically every single game until the you know, ridiculous primetime game Thursday, December 17th against the Bucks, which people are lucky it's not on Yahoo.
Uh-huh.
It's basically the league and the schedule makers saying like, oh yeah, the Rams, they might be okay, but they're really boring. They don't have a marquee player. Do you get that feeling like the rest of the league, which I would agree with, that I think the rest of the fans and around the league and the country kind of thinks that this is a very dull team?
Absolutely. I even like the past 5 or 6 years, I felt like we've been one of the most irrelevant teams in the NFL. We're given almost no primetime exposure at all.
Yeah, and as a Jets fan, I feel the same way. Off the field, the Jets are very entertaining, but you know, I always get people complaining to me who are not Jet fans, who live in New York, who are stuck with the one game in, you know, on the CBS win. They're like, oh, I can't believe I have to watch the Jets. They're unwatchable. But I guess you could say that about any team without a quarterback. Anyway, so you guys go to Minnesota at 3-4. What do you think?
You know, I think the Vikings take this one again this year. They're going to have Adrian Peterson. We're going to have to actually go up against Bridgewater this year. With it being at Minnesota, I don't see us taking this one.
Mm-hmm. So you end the first half 3-5, and then you guys host the Bears.
I think we should be able to beat the Bears this year. Jay Cutler, you know, he likes to throw his interceptions, and I think this might be the one game where Janoris Jenkins is able to shine as the playmaker and maybe be able to get a few game-breaking interceptions.
So at 4-5, you guys would have a very tough two-game road trip against the Ravens and the Bengals.
Brutal schedule. Jeez.
Brutal schedule, yeah. But you guys would also desperately need to win one of these, because then you're coming home to 3 straight home games.
Yes,
so
and
can they win one of these AFC North games?
I think, believe it or not, we'd probably be most likely to beat the Ravens. And that's only because the Rams have shown, you know, these past few years, the biggest game that everyone assumes that we have absolutely no shot in is typically the one that we end up taking. And personally, I think that we'd have less of a chance against the Ravens, but because we're usually able to rally at least one of these big games, I think that we'll probably take the Ravens one and drop the one at Cincinnati.
Which would bring you to 5-6. And then you have a very interesting three-game home stretch in December, starting off with the Cardinals.
Cardinals at home, I think as long as our offense is still healthy, I think that we finally get a win against the Cardinals at home this year.
You say finally. Is there like a long streak of you guys losing to the Cardinals?
Well, I mean, last year we dropped both games to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So 6-6, and then the middle game there is hosting the Lions.
I don't see us beating the Lions. They're a tough team. You know, with being in the same division as the Packers, Vikings are looking good this year. I think that they're going to be battling pretty hard for an off-season spot, a postseason spot, and I don't think that they're going to let the Rams take one away from them.
And then to end the three-game stretch, and by the way, not just three straight home games, three home games in 11 days. I wonder if that's ever happened before.
That game against the Lions, though, that could be a loser-leaves-town match, because if you're 6-6 and then you lose to Detroit for the wild card, you'd also be losing the tiebreaker now.
Well, who's to say Detroit's so good, though?
Yeah, well, that's true. But they will have also lost the tiebreaker to the Vikings then, which is another wild card contender.
Now we're getting very particular. This is like a high class problem for a Rams fan, Chester.
All right, okay, fine. So you're 6-7, we said.
Yeah, and then you guys host the Buccaneers on Thursday night. It's a take your wife out for dinner game if you're not a fan of the Rams or Buccaneers.
Wait, but you were complaining about not having national TV games. There you go, prime time.
James. Yeah, Gordon. But the Rams fans should watch. I don't think that we have to be subjected to this.
Yeah.
So I think that we're going to be able to pick up a win against the Buccaneers. Obviously, once again, it's all anecdotal because it was one game, but Jameis Winston was making very, very poor decisions in the first preseason game. If he keeps that up, I don't see our secondary, as long as they stay healthy, letting him get away with that.
Yeah, make a prediction.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think the Rams' defensive line might be better than anything that Jameis saw in the ACC last year.
Probably. Probably better than Duke's defensive line.
Yeah. Hey, I have a friend who played a defensive end for Duke. He wouldn't make the Rams, though.
Is Jameis Winston even going to be playing in that game?
You know, it's tough to say. I don't think he'll get injured. I am curious to see if he'll still be unsuspended or in any kind of trouble with the law at that point.
Right. No, it's a fair point. I think for him to make it through 16 games would be a big victory this year, honestly.
It really would.
And then you guys go to Seattle, 7-7. I don't even know if this game matters, but in your heart it matters.
You can get a season sweep.
Yeah, and there's absolutely no way we win this game. I mean, if obviously this is all without considering any injuries. Seahawks, they're probably going to be fighting for home field advantage at this point. Absolutely no way that they drop this game to us in Seattle. We haven't beat them in Seattle for quite a long time either.
So then you're 7-8, and you end the season at the 2-13 Niners?
Yeah.
What do you think the Niners' record is going to that game?
You know, I think that they'll probably have a four-win season, but saying that, they'll probably end up around 8-8 again.
Wow, so they're just as good as the Rams. That's a lot of confidence.
Well, hold on.
Are the Rams going to end up 8-8? Do you guys win that last game?
Yeah, I think we beat 49ers on the road at the end. It's just nice to finally not be facing the Seahawks in week 17 in Seattle.
Yeah. I mean, was this the first time a Jeff Fisher team would finish 8-8?
Yes, it is. The best he's done yet is 7-9 with the Rams.
No, I was making a joke because I think those Titans teams finished 8-8 like 10 times.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, but I think this would be literally half of his seasons would now be 7-9 or 8-8. I think 10 out of 20 or something like that.
Okay, but the good question is, if they go 8-8, does Jeff Fisher keep his job?
I do think he keeps his job because he's shown, like we talked about previously, he's shown pretty much an affinity for being able to keep a job while being a very mediocre coach. I'll be honest, I care much less about Jeff Fisher. I just want Les Snead to stay because he's been killing our drafts lately.
Yeah, I think there is definitely, at least on the defensive side, you might need somebody in there on the offensive side. There's definitely something brewing on defense that could be special this year.
Absolutely.
All right, so there you have it. Jordan Roos, a little more confident, but not as confident, frankly, as a lot of outsiders. A lot of outsiders see the Rams as a serious contender this year. As I said in the beginning of the podcast, trolling Akiva just a little bit, Akiva thought they were, or at least he has said that in the past, although I will note that Akiva ranked the Rams 17 in our preseason rankings, and I actually ranked them 15. So maybe I'm the one who's too high on the Rams. 8-8 would definitely be an improvement. But that schedule is just so tough, and especially in the beginning of the season, it's so tough that even an improved team is going to have an uphill climb to make the playoffs. But, Jordan, thanks for coming on the podcast today, and we wish you and the Rams a lot of luck this year, except when they play the Vikings, speaking personally. You're on Twitter at mostlyjordanr, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So if you're mostly Jordan, then what's the remainder of you?
Well, you go ahead and follow me, you'll find out.
Ah, okay, there you go. It's a good plug. All right, Jordan, thanks very much.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
So, Akiva, Jordan starts the second half with the Rams at 8-8, which is pretty realistic considering that most of the teams in the first half had their teams above 500.
Yeah, I mean, the Rams are, you know, they are what they are. 8-8 would be pretty fitting for a team that's pretty good but doesn't have a good quarterback.
Yeah, and I guess for the 16th-ranked team, that would be about what you would expect. All right, so now let's head about 200 miles west on Route I-70. And we're going to head to Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. You know, the Chiefs and the Rams, they're in the same state, I guess, but you don't really see them as rivals because they're in different conferences. And I guess it's the same with the Royals and the Cardinals. People don't really think of the Kansas City-St. Louis rivalry nationally. None of their teams really get to play each other that much. Obviously, in hockey and basketball, they don't even have teams to have a rivalry.
Yeah, whatever happened to that? They have like this. They built this like whole stadium in Kansas City, and they never used it for basketball or hockey. They haven't been able to attract anybody there.
Yeah, it's weird to me that St. Louis doesn't have a basketball team. And of course, they used to have the Hawks.
And they had the Spirit of St. Louis, I think, in the ABA. NBA.
That's true. All right. But I don't think anybody is listening to this to hear us analyze Missouri sports politics.
I thought you were just going to say, I don't think anybody's listening to this. I'm like, yep. You're
also right. True. Also true. All right. So let's jump right to Kansas City.
So joining us now to talk about the 15th ranked Kansas City Chiefs is Cole Hogan. Cole, how are you today?
Good. 15. Awesome.
Yeah. Where would you have them?
Well, no. See, I was listening to your guys' podcasts, and online you only have posted through like 25, and I was like, how low do they have us ranked?
Yeah, so we're recording this a few days in advance. But So we have the Chiefs ranked 15th. Cole, tell us, do you think that's a fair ranking? Do you think it's too high? Do you think it's too low?
Can I ask where the Broncos are relative to that?
Yeah, the Broncos are a lot higher.
Warning, hot take approaching.
Considering I have us just about even, I would say that's a little skewed.
Oh boy.
Oh, hot take right off the bat. And is that because of the Chiefs-Broncos rivalry, or, you know, you think Peyton's just going to lose it this year?
I can't deny that that's a part of it. You know, I have a friend that's lived out of Colorado, and he's actually who I went to visit in New York, but...
By the way, good to call back to a conversation that was not on the actual podcast.
No, I love that. Whenever you're watching, like, The Daily Show, and they make the joke, the references, like, the warm-up act, like, when Jon Stewart came out, the crowd goes nuts. No one on TV understands why. But you understand if you watch the show, oh, they made a joke that I don't get, and you could appreciate that, even though you don't get it. So.
Right, so we're really dealing to the 0% here.
But, okay, to answer the question, yes, I do expect some sort of a regression from Peyton, although obviously he's incredible. But also I expect a big step up from the Chiefs that a lot of people aren't expecting or seeing coming.
Okay, so let's jump right into the Chiefs. You know, the Chiefs have, I think, three big holes on the team, based off the team they had last year. At wide receiver, offensive line, and then probably their run defense. But let's start at the top with Alex Smith. Akiva's a big Alex Smith fan. We argue about quarterback rankings all the time, and he has him a lot higher than I do. I think Akiva's argument is, you know, he's a guy who doesn't turn the ball over, and you can win with him. And my argument basically is that he's limited. He doesn't turn the ball over, that's true, but that's because, you know, he throws checkdown passes. He never really challenges the opposing defense. And the ultimate proof of that is that they were the first team in modern football history last year that did not have a single touchdown to their wide receivers last year. And so, you know, but the Chiefs don't really have an alternative at quarterback, so Alex Smith is clearly it. So tell us, you know, what folks in Kansas City or Chiefs fans throughout the nation think about Alex Smith.
Well, you know, there's a big divide there, just like a lot of the middle-tier quarterbacks. My personal ranking for Alex Smith is 12. That's my magic number for him in ranking.
Wow.
Who's 13 if he's 12?
Who's 15?
Who's like 13? Who's he right ahead of?
He's above Andy Dalton.
Okay, all right. That's fair.
I don't know. I would have to – I've actually written this out before. Off the top of my head, that's tough.
No, that's okay. But all right, I mean, 12 isn't obscene. That's fair.
Yeah, I'm not trying to – I don't think he's top 10 or anything. I do think he's more than capable. My evidence or my argument to go for him being higher than average, I guess is the best way to say that, is if you go back to the 2013 playoff game, which I'm trying to pull up stats for here, when we had Jamal Charles, and we had struggled the entire second half to put up points, but the entire first half, he just put the team on his back when we had no other options and put us up, what was it, 45-44, and we were up by four touchdowns at halftime, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
That was a great game.
Yeah, unfortunately, the second half collapse really, you know, puts the mark on it. We had a number one receiver in Dwayne Bowe, obviously, who in
He was number one?
Well, a few years ago.
No, number one on the roster.
Oh, well, someone has to be number one, but he was like barely an NFL player last year.
Fair enough. But, you know, when you have nothing better, he is the number one option.
Okay.
When he's your number one, and he obviously had a great year in 2010 with Matt Castle with the, 16 or 17 touchdowns. He's obviously regressed, and their styles, Dwayne Bowe's catching style, does not jive with Smith's passing style, where Smith likes the guy to be wide open, to be a burner, to have clear path above or around their defender. And Bowe is the type of bruiser that fights for the ball, or in the past he was. I think that was a huge hindrance on our passing game, along with Donnie Avery having just a horrible, horrible last season and a half. I mean, he didn't even suit up for the last three games last year. Obviously, you have the emergence of Travis Kelce, which everyone is hoping that he can be great, but we haven't truly seen that yet with his fumbling issues last year. We're really hoping that the addition of Jeremy Maclin and Chris Conley out of the third round of the draft can really shore up the receiving core and add a lot of speed to that, which we hope, and the plan is, that that is what helps Smith get deeper passes and more efficient in the passing game.
And Maclin should be an upgrade over Bo, although, of course, he's had injury concerns. Last year, I think, was his maybe only his second season when he wasn't banged up.
Yeah, you know, and that's always a worry. We also have Chris Conley behind him, as I mentioned, and also DeAnthony Thomas out of Oregon that we drafted 2 years ago, switched to only wide receiver this offseason, whereas last season he was that wide receiver running back combo that never works out. So we're really hoping that with Jeremy Maclin, even if he gets hurt, you still have some speed behind him. We also have guys that are lesser known, but we still have hope in, keep saying we, Albert Wilson being one of them, and on a lesser scale, Frankie Hammond Jr. They're more of your not at the same caliber, like a Wes Welker slot guy.
So we addressed, you know, receiver, and you think that there's room for improvement there. The other offensive problem that this team has really had is the offensive line. I know that Jamal Charles made noise in the offseason about how the team needed to upgrade the offensive line, but it seems like they've taken a step backwards. They've lost their best blocker, Rodney Hudson. You know, Eric Fisher has struggled so far. Donald Stevenson and Jeff Allen coming back this year. I think he had the PED suspension last year, and Jeff Allen got injured and missed most of the season. But, I mean, is this an offensive line that's going to improve, or is it going to be a lot of the same issues that they've had?
You know, that's tough to say because the entire preseason they've just been switching guys in and out on the right side. On the left side, it has been reported that Fisher and Ben Grubbs out of the trade for, I believe, a fifth-round draft pick with the Saints in the offseason have really solidified the left side, and they both looked good. As for center and the right side, it's a little more the question mark. Kush and Allen obviously have talent, although Kush is young, and Allen has the injury history, as you mentioned. Donald Stevenson really showed promise in the 2013 season. He was our leading right tackle starter candidate in the preseason last year, before his four-game suspension last year was announced, and he just never got out of the coach's doghouse last season. So hopefully the left and right tackle, as well as the left guard in particular with Ben Grubbs, can really have some talent there that can hold down the rest of the line.
As you mentioned, you know, obviously Jamal Charles needs no introduction. He's great. But a lot of times we see, like, when one running back, even a great running back, like an Adrian Peterson, runs for, like, you know, 5.5 yards a carry, the backup's always like, oh, he's at 5.2, and yeah, maybe it's not sustainable over 350 carries, but they're still getting the job done. Niall Davis last year was really poor, so, you know, generally, you don't have a lot of running backs who start off weakly and then, you know, magically morph into, like, a great player. So you're writing him off completely, Niall Davis?
That's tough. Here in Kansas City, there's actually a lot of optimism surrounding Niall Davis. I'm not as optimistic when it comes to his potential future, but I do think that his running style does sort of lend itself as a nice complement to Jamal's, and we do, when Jamal was injured last year, we did just feed Niall Davis the ball, and although he didn't do stellar, a 3.5 carry is workable, I suppose, 3.5 yard per carry average. I want to say that I have confidence in him in the future. Not, but he will never be a successor to Jamal in my eyes. And obviously that would be very difficult to be.
All right, so let's move it over to the defense, Cole. And, you know, on offense, there's it feels like it's a little top-heavy. You know, Alex Smith, good player. Jamal Charles, great player. Jeremy Maclin, good player. Kelce, very underrated. And then, you know, as we discussed, a lot of issues on the line and receiver depth. But the defense is really loaded with a bunch of studs, so starting with the defensive line, is there, you know, one player in particular you think is going to break out this year? Is there anybody, you know, who are offenses really going to have to key in on? Because there's, in the front seven, other than obviously Justin Houston, who's probably the best player on your team, you know, which of these seven guys is going to be scaring offensive lines and coordinators the most this year?
Here in the Kansas City market, it's been well known for about, well, ever since training camp started, Dontari Poe is out for the first few weeks of the season. He had surgery on his back about 2 or 3 weeks before training camp opened, and he had a disc removed in his back. And so that really puts a asterisk next to that nose tackle spot. You hope a guy in Jay Howard can step up and perform, but that's a big hole to fill. Dontari Poe is obviously going to get a gigantic contract this upcoming offseason as his rookie deal expires. On the just the front line, Alan Bailey and DeVito are both very talented, if not more just average players that you fill your line with. But Josh Maga filled in nicely for Derek Johnson last year, and with Derek Johnson's return, they will play alongside each other in the left and right inside linebacker spots. And obviously Tom Bahali rounds out that right side. He actually took a pay cut because he wanted to stay here in Kansas City. He believed in this team so much, and he is preventing D Ford from getting on the field, which, good or bad, he was our first round draft pick last year, and he didn't show great last year, so we're hoping to see improvement from him. Outside of that, it is all mostly unknowns.
Yeah, and moving to the secondary, you know, Sean Smith is the probably the, you know, the most well-known and maybe the best player on the team, but I thought Haseem Abdullah played really well last year also.
Yeah, Hussein Abdullah is, no, you're fine, definitely a great free safety that we signed. It's going to be tough for him to stay on the field if Eric Berry returns to form, which is commendable on its own right. I don't know if you guys saw out there in New York, but he actually, throughout chemo, gained a pound. He didn't lose any muscle, well, maybe muscle, but he didn't lose any overall mass throughout that entire eight-month process, and he started training the first day of training camp, or he started back at the first day of training camp. He played in the first preseason game. He is good to go. So that's just incredibly impressive on its own. We signed Ron Parker to a deal in the offseason. He is a guy who absolutely played out of his mind in the Buffalo Bills game for the Chiefs last year. He had something like two interceptions. He caused a fumble at like the 1 yard line, and he is really a great player at the safety position. However, he is all-time terrible at the cornerback position, in my opinion. So as long as he stays at safety, we're going to be just fine with him. Tyvon Branch is his backup, who is a great player but just gets injured so much, as well as Sanders Cummings, who also backs up Eric Berry and Hussein Abdullah. Sanders Cummings, you might remember, is actually the guy that Jamaal Charles broke his actual ankle in training camp last year.
Literally broke his ankle.
Jamaal Charles literally juked Sanders Cummings so hard in training camp last year that he broke his ankle.
Wow.
So he lives in infamy here in Kansas City.
Cole, I was wondering, you know, you're 20 years old, right?
Yeah.
What's the best Chiefs moment of your young life? Because there haven't been a ton, probably, right?
You know, the first half of the playoff game, probably, followed closely by the worst moment of my life being the second half.
So the best moment was a loss in a playoff game that you led by 28 points.
Man, yeah. I have tickets to the Chiefs-Broncos game with one of my best buds here coming up in week two. So I'm hoping that can, you know, replace that with a win for the first time since Peyton Manning has been a Bronco.
Have you seen a Chiefs playoff win?
No.
Oh, man. That question got a little more bleak than I had even anticipated. And I'm a Jets fan.
Before I started watching. It wasn't even alive. So both the Chiefs and the Royals were absolutely catastrophically terrible throughout my entire generation's life until this last year when the Royals obviously broke that streak.
They have a 3-10 playoff record in my lifetime.
Yeah. So. 3 wins since the Super Bowl. So you guys are, you know, a little bit, it's funny, the Jets are kind of viewed as sad sack. The Jets have, you know, more road playoff wins since then. You know, they hit those
AFC Championship games in Mark Sanchez and Ryan's
years. You know, the Chiefs really should get a little more national street cred for being kind of pathetic.
They've had a lot of teams that, you know, 13-3 teams.
Yeah, they had a first pick, but like they're rarely like, oh, there's the, you know, 4-12 Chiefs for the third straight year. But it's sort of been like consistent mediocrity, like to slightly below averageness.
Well, Akiva, if I may be frank, and this is something that I've long complained about Jets fans being so self-centered and myopic, the Jets are not a franchise that anybody cares about nationally. The Jets are not a, oh, woe is me franchise.
I've admitted this on this podcast.
But the Jets love to pretend as if, oh, they've had historically bad luck. And no, the Jets are just an average, mediocre team.
Cole, do you agree with that the Jets are irrelevant in general?
I will say that I read a lot of and see a lot of stories about the Jets out here in Kansas, so.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but that's because of the fact that they're in New York, and so.
Well, of course, anyone in New York is getting coverage.
When Geno Smith gets punched in the jaw, everybody's like, oh, that couldn't happen to a better team than the Jets.
Which, by the way, was hysterical.
Oh, absolutely. The teams that are historically bad in the NFL, you know, you have obviously the Cardinals and the Lions and the Bengals and the Browns, and then you have teams that have been very good but, you know, snake-bitten in the playoffs, like the Eagles and the Vikings.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I mean, I personally can't speak for it, and I'm sorry for cutting you off, but obviously the 2003 Chiefs offense was one of the all-time greats with Trent Green, Will Shields, Priest Holmes, yes, but then we had one of the all-time worst defenses to pair with it, so it's just been a very difficult time. I remember watching the playoff game in 2003. My parents were devastated.
These guys are getting younger and younger, Chester.
Yeah, it's funny. I think the Chiefs, and there's a lot of teams in the AFC like that, they're very similar to the Dolphins. So this is in my lifetime, or in my lifetime as a fan, I'll say. So this goes back to the early 90s. The Chiefs are one game better than Miami, 191 wins versus Miami is 190. They've made the playoffs one more time, but they've only won 3 playoff games, and Miami's won 5. So, you know, they're very similar, and we talked about that a lot with the Dolphins guy, that the Dolphins sort of get forgotten in the national discussion, but they're a team that sort of just, you know, has floated around at 8-8 year after year, and once in a while they make the playoffs, but they never do anything in the playoffs. But it's interesting because, you know, if you think they're going to compete with the Broncos to win the division, then that means that, you know, you think that they have a real chance to make some noise. So let's turn to the schedule now and see how that's going to work out. You have a very tough early schedule, which is sort of the reverse. Last year, the Kansas City started 7-3 and then collapsed. This year, you have an easy December. But, you know, I was looking at the schedule, and I thought you guys could start 0-4 and maybe even 1-7 before the bye, which would, you know, make that easy December irrelevant. But let's see what you think. So week one, you're going to go on the road to face Houston.
Yeah, I have that as a win. I don't think that Houston has their quarterback situation figured out. Of course, if Ryan Mallett just explodes and is who you hope he is as a Texans fan, then obviously you look at that differently. And I hope that he does for their sake, but I honestly don't think that they have that figured out. And as we know, without a quarterback, you really don't have a chance.
All right, so on the road, big win at Houston in week one. Then short rest, 3 days later, you're facing the Broncos at home, your biggest rival.
I don't think I'm a perfectly impartial person here, considering I have tickets to that game. I have that as a victory. It'll be close. I wouldn't be shocked if we lost.
All right, so forget about 0-4. You have the Chiefs starting 2-0, but it gets even tougher. You have 11 days to get ready, but on Monday Night Football, you go to Green Bay to face the Packers.
Everyone here in Kansas City is well aware of Andy Reid's bye week record with, I think, 18-1 now, 17-1.
Yep.
But unfortunately, I recognize the greatness there, and I have to realize that Aaron Rodgers is going to beat us.
All right, so 2-1, then another tough road game at Cincinnati. And, you know, that's a team with whom, just like Houston, who you could possibly have some playoff tiebreakers down the line at the end of the year.
And this is the worst month, probably the worst opening month of any team in the league.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I thought 0-4, but, you know, maybe 1-3, but we're 2-1. What happens when they go to Cincinnati?
Well, honestly, I don't respect Marvin Lewis as a coach. I don't respect.
Do you respect Andy Dalton as a postseason
quarterback? Do you respect Marvin Lewis as a man? do you respect
however,
Marvin Lewis as a lover?
We don't have Sean Smith in this game, or any of the other first three, and who knows about Dontari Poe? That's a tough one to call. I have it as a loss. Despite that.
All right, so 2-2, but, you know, you come home for definitely the easiest game you've had yet on the schedule to play the Bears. And, you know, the Bears are not a terrible team necessarily, but it's a lot easier than that first month.
Yeah, I have that as a victory simply because Jay Cutler is a circus show in his own right.
Yep.
And they got rid of arguably their best wide receiver, and everyone's coming back a year older, which, I mean, you can argue that for every team. But they just got a new coach, if I'm not mistaken, so that... I think all those factors coming into play, we count that as a victory for the Chiefs. So 3-2.
All right, and then you go to Minnesota to face the Vikings.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson, the guy no one has seen in a year. That's a tough one simply
You guys should
that.
Go to this game together.
What?
He's a Vikings fan. You guys should go to this game together.
I would love that, you know, if we could work out a way to get me up there. Poor Chiefs, or poor college student and all.
Yeah, we're not providing sponsorship.
I actually do have a buddy up there. We talked about him going. But, you know, that's tough. I like their quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater. Obviously a lot better than Christian Ponder.
It's a low bar. All right,
yes,
so what happens in that game?
I'm going to go with a victory simply because I think Dontari Poe will be back by then, which really solidifies our running game.
All right, so now you're up to 4-2. You know, and you mentioned the running game. I think the Chiefs have been really one of the worst run defenses in the league the last few years. Despite, you know, I mean, they have a lot of fantastic guys on that defensive line, but most of them are pressuring the quarterback. But, you know, you're facing a slew of good running backs here in the early going. You know, of course, you miss Arian Foster, but you have Eddie Lacy, and you have Gio Bernard and Hill in Cincinnati, and then Matt Forte and Adrian Peterson. And then the next week you have Le'Veon Bell and Pittsburgh at home.
Honestly, can't remember how our defense was rated against the run in 2013 with the playoff run there. But last year, obviously, it was terrible. I attribute that more to the loss of Derek Johnson and Eric Berry, who are well known as run stoppers. With Dontari Poe back, hopefully healthy, obviously, and Derek Johnson hopefully healthy, and Eric Berry hopefully healthy, all three of those guys are our ace run stoppers up the middle. Obviously, Justin Houston can hold his own. The left side there with Tom Bahali holding that side, he's a little slower, but he's obviously still great. So I think we're going to be better, a lot better than we were last year with those additions.
And so what happens in Week 7 against Pittsburgh?
But Ben Roethlisberger is a talent, no doubt. Le'Veon Bell is a talent, no doubt. Antonio Brown is awesome. I count that as a loss simply because of the fact that I think Ben Roethlisberger just goes off for whatever unknown reason.
All right, so 4-3. Then you go to London to face the Lions in a game that's technically a home game.
Yeah, ain't that awesome. Thank you, Clark Hunt.
Careful. That sounded very close to something else. It's okay. We're allowed to curse on this podcast. So you can take Clark Hunt as many times as you want.
Yeah, I have that as a victory. Matt Stafford's obviously great, and throwing to Calvin Johnson is obviously a luxury. However, I can't think of any other weapons they have outside of that, and so I just don't feel threatened.
Well, Amir Abdullah looks pretty good in the preseason. The next Barry Sanders are calling him.
The Jets have made many preseason monsters.
Yeah.
I think Victor Cruz was the first one.
Yeah.
And so now you're at 5-3, and you can tell, you know, when we look at the schedule, I also like to look at it from a TV angle. You could tell the schedule makers and the powers that be of the league are pretty high on the Chiefs this year. You know, you have a home, you know, that CBS big, you know, week two slot. You have a very high profile Monday Night Football game in Green Bay, and they have to think you're decent or else, you know, anybody who goes to Green Bay who's not loses 42-10. And so now you have at Denver. I thought this would be a national game, but actually looking at it, the Giants play the Patriots at the same time. So nobody's going to see this other than in Kansas City and Denver market. So you're at Denver. What do you think is going to happen there? Are you guys going to sweep the Broncos?
No, I don't. I'm not that delusional.
Okay. So you're 5-4.
I do want to step back just a second and say that I do think that the league thinks we're going to, and the powers that be for scheduling, think we're going to be decent. However, obviously with most of our big games up front, they're not sure with our late season collapse if that's going to happen again. So they're leaving room for us to be opted into some late season primetime games.
Yeah, and that's actually a very good point because the next game at San Diego is that very type of game. It's not a huge TV market by any stretch, you know, that game.
But that was on Sunday Night Football. Could that be flexed out by week 11?
Yeah, that's a flex out because week 11 already. Yeah. So I'm saying a game like that, you know, maybe the Chargers and Chiefs are both like 5-5 or whatever, but so what do you think? Are they going to, you know, that's a tough road swing, you know, at Denver than at San Diego. Do you think they can pull off the Sunday night win?
San Diego is definitely talented. However, we are 4-0 against them, I believe, in the last 2 years, and I don't see that streak ending this year with all the uncertainty surrounding the franchise. I just see that being a gigantic distraction this entire season.
Wait, which one's about whether they move to L.A., you mean?
Yeah, and Philip Rivers
think,
and all that.
I don't think the players care if they have to move.
Yeah,
like
Rivers just got a contract, didn't he?
I understand that, but I also believe that Rivers has been quoted multiple times saying he will not follow the team to San Diego. So I believe that that's some serious uncertainty.
To L.A., you mean? Wow.
Well, because
he's got a lot of kids.
L.A. is a den of evil, and you know he can't have his kids around that.
He does have eight kids.
First of all, again, because we're recording this a week before it's going to post, we should just say he does have blank kids so that we can insert like the 9 if he has another one.
Oh, if he has another kid. Yeah. That's a good one. All right, so you're 6-4, and now your schedule really opens up. You host the Bills the next week.
Yeah. Kyle Orton is obviously retired now, and he actually played pretty well for them last year. But now they have a combination of Matt Castle, who is near and dear to the bottom end of us here in Kansas City. And they also have Tyrod Taylor, who I'm actually pretty excited to see how he turns out because I'm just interested how the Ravens fans where he was are always very high on him. So I'm just excited to see how he turns out when he has a chance to actually be a starter because Matt Castle is not your answer.
Chester, I think, will attest that I've kind of been leading the Tyrod Taylor bandwagon as empty as it is right now.
I'm all for it. I'm on.
So, but you think the Chiefs are going to pull out that game?
Yeah, I do. I do. I don't feel threatened by Buffalo, despite, I mean, we've played the Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills have played, including this season, 8 straight years. So it's basically a conference game at this point. And those games are always long, dirty, and awful. And I hate them because we almost always lose, but somehow we win.
All right, so 7-4, and then we see for the first time on December 6th this season, we see the Chiefs again. Would you say the Raiders are your biggest rival or the Broncos?
Historically, Oakland. Currently, the Broncos.
All right, good answer. All right, so then what do you think, that game in Oakland?
You know, the Raiders are much improved this year, I think. I'm not totally sold on Derek Carr, but the addition of Amari Cooper and stealing Rodney Hudson from us just really set that rivalry back up. I still think that I've thought we were going to sweep them for 2 straight years. Obviously, that hasn't happened either year. But I think this is the year that we sweep them. So I think that's a victory.
Spoiler alert for week 17. So that's 8-4. You face the Chargers again just 3 weeks after
going
you
for another
them.
Sweep over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as I said, we're 4-0 in the last 2 years, I believe. We might be 3-1. I don't see that ending.
All right.
So that's a victory.
And then you go to Baltimore.
Yeah. And I have that as a loss. Joe Flacco has black magic behind him, I swear. I don't understand half of the things he does, but he wins games and he goes deep in the playoffs. He wins Super Bowl or won Super Bowl. So I can't really argue with him. They have something going over there, and I think we lose to him.
By the way, San Diego swept the Chiefs in 2013.
Okay.
Just FYI.
Okay,
but
my bad.
But you did
bad.
Sweep them last year.
Yeah. I was at...
That's 9-5. You know, you're in the thick of the playoff race in this hypothetical. You host the Browns.
I'm actually thinking about going to that game, too, because I'm interested in the whole Johnny Manziel, will he start drama.
You get a ticket for $16.
Yeah. You know, great value, right? Sit up in the nosebleeds.
Is there no sort of excitement about the Chiefs this year, or is it just the stadium so big they could always get cheap tickets?
We pay $80 for the Broncos tickets, more than that cost 5 rows.
Yeah, that's the first game, and it's against the Broncos on you know, a primetime game. It's the cheapest seats actually of almost any team I've seen this season.
Arrowhead holds 474,000 people, Akiva. So
probably, yeah.
It's the Browns.
Fair enough.
What, do you want
you guys might have locked up the division
prices?
By then. You could be resting Alex Smith. This could be Chase
Akiva, on a serious note, week 16, you know, keeping in mind that your team might be in the playoff race there, your fantasy football team might be in the championship, how much money would you have to be paid to go to a Browns-Chiefs game in week 16?
The problem is, in a vacuum, I would have no problem going to the game, tailgating beforehand. My problem
it's a great tailgate, but you know you won't be able to keep up on the Jets.
That's my problem. There's going to be 12 games on at 1 o'clock that week, and
so many playoff implications.
The Jets, are they going to get the first pick in the draft? I got to find out. That's the problem. Nobody should go to games except at night, because there's or maybe at 4 o'clock. You could justify if you watch the 1 o'clocks in the parking lot. It's very difficult to say like I'm going to go to this game. And obviously, if you know, to go to one game is reasonable, but like to go to a 1 o'clock game and then you miss the 4 o'clock games driving home, it's a really big commitment when you could sit on your couch on a huge screen with a better view,
exactly.
Eat some good food that's much cheaper, and watch 12 games at once.
You know, that's an interesting take that I've honestly never once heard before.
Is he being fresh with us?
I don't know. We could send him to his room. But and I'm just gonna chime in. Going to night games sucks. Also, I went to the Vikings.
Yeah, no, going to night games is horrible.
I went to the Vikings Jets Monday Nighter a couple of years ago. That was the one where Brett Favre had his 500th touchdown pass to Randy Moss. It was Moss's first game having been traded back to the Vikings. That was a short-lived period, of course. And that was also the game where there was a hurricane monsoon in the Meadowlands, so the game was delayed an hour and a half. If you guys mm-hmm. remember that.
Yeah.
I ended up getting home at 3 a.m.
Yeah, that happens with the night games.
But that's in New York, of course. You know,
it's impossible to get home before
it's a disaster.
One from these night games if you're on Long Island or Westchester.
That was just a disaster. But all right, so what happens in week 16 against the Browns?
You know, I'm sorry that you guys have to play in an air conditioner, that night games aren't fun for you guys. I visited that stadium, by the way. Boring.
It's a very boring stadium.
Oh, I agree.
Really, really, they should have knocked it down immediately. It was such a bad building job.
Waste of $1 billion.
So. Glad we agree.
But then again, football stadiums in general, it's not like baseball stadiums. You know, they don't have sort of the uniqueness to it. Honestly, the only
We're talking to a Chiefs fan. There is some uniqueness to that field. Well, I don't know about the outside parts of the stadium.
People talk about the fan. I don't know. I mean, to me, the fact that they spent $1 billion on that new stadium was ridiculous. You know, but this.
I will say that I went in the Commissioner's Club. Highly recommended if you can get a ticket in there.
Look at this guy. Who's he hanging out
with? High roller.
Hey, you need to go on the tour, man. It's all the same.
Let's get back.
It's a tour. I thought you were like actually at the game with like Roger Goodell.
No. I'm a college student.
Well, listen, maybe your dad is like, you know, roommates with him or something from college. I don't know.
Let's get back to the Chiefs and the Browns in Week 16. This podcast is off the rails.
Cleveland, I'm interested in them. I think they're adorable. I'm not threatened by them. I think that's a Chief victory.
All right, so now you're 10-5.
Yeah, 10-5. Is this for the division, this last game? The Broncos' record at this point. Cole.
I think it would be a catastrophic season for them to do worse than 11-5.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we win the division, if the Chiefs win the division, it will only be by tiebreakers if we're both 11-5. But I don't see the Broncos being worse than 11-5.
But you have the Chiefs right now at 4-1 in the division and 10-5. So if they beat the Raiders, they're 5-1 in the division.
I do like that we're breaking these hypothetical ties. Yeah. We should
I'm just saying, unless the Broncos also sweep San Diego and Oakland, I think you'd probably be winning that tiebreaker.
Well, we're going to have him predict the Broncos.
Well, are you saying that's out of the question for Peyton Manning and the Broncos?
I guess you have San Diego winning about 5 games, but...
I guess that says what I think about San Diego then.
Oh, so you're down on the Chargers. Okay.
All right, so in Week 17, so you have a win over Oakland?
Yeah, I do.
Wow.
Who knows if it'll be our backups in like the last 2 years, but I hope we can get a victory in Week 17 at home versus Oakland Raiders.
11-5. Yeah, I mean, you'll sign for that right now.
Yeah, and you know, my personal opinion with the playoffs is 10-6 can get you there, but you aren't guaranteed. 11-5, you should be in. So that's what that's my hoping, you know, that's where I hope for. I expect 11-5.
Yeah, so maybe you have like a first round in Denver, the 5-4 matchup.
And that's terrifying in itself.
All right, so there you have it. Cole Hogan, a very confident Chiefs fan. You know, I, of course, had the Chiefs ranked 18 in my preseason rankings. Akiva has them at 13, but Cole thinks that we're both too low. He has them at 11-5, possibly competing with the Broncos for a division title. Cole, thanks for joining us today. You're on Twitter at JhawkCole, is that correct?
That's right.
Who's your number one team? Is it the Jayhawks? Is it the Chiefs? Is it the Royals?
I have it's definitely the Chiefs. Honestly, I love KU football, which is even worse.
Do you love KU football more than basketball?
No, they're about equal, I'd say. But their seasons are separated, so minus a few weeks, so they don't really compete.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but in your heart, they
do. In your heart.
Yeah. So you only have so much space. You know, you'll
I
learn
love all my children equally.
Do you have a favorite children, Chester? Right.
Yeah, the Vikings are probably my number one favorite child.
Oh, I meant your actual kids.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting to them.
I got it. Vikings number one.
Well, I don't have Arsenal up there like one of our Jets fans did. So, thanks again. Good luck to the Chiefs this year.
Thanks, guys. It was fun.
Okay, Akiva, so what do you think of Cole Hogan picking the Chiefs to go 11-5?
You know, there's going to be some sleeper in the AFC, especially if... You know, a lot of people are getting more and more worried about Manning's health.
We also didn't call him on the fact that at the beginning of that interview, he thinks that the Broncos and Chiefs are about even. But then at the end of the interview, when he does the predictions, he says the absolute worst case scenario for the Broncos, he thinks, is 11-5. And he thinks that his best case scenario for the Chiefs is 11-5. So we didn't call him on that. But you know what? He's only 20 years old. He has years to learn. His teams will always let him down.
Well, he could be a Patriots fan. His teams would never let him down.
Yeah, but unfortunately for him, he lives in Kansas, not Boston. Not unfortunate for him, just as a sports fan, unfortunate for him.
Why, would you rather live in Kansas or Boston?
I've been to Kansas a few times. I think it's a very beautiful place. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about a team that plays in a place that we've both lived for many years, and that's the New York Giants.
We both lived in Jersey for many years.
Well, we've both lived in New York. I guess the team plays in New Jersey. And our guest is going to be Josh Berliner.
We're both from East Rutherford.
I live in the marshes, right outside.
Were you expecting a pessimistic Josh Berliner?
You know, Josh Berliner is usually pretty down on his team, so who knows what he'll predict the Giants to do. Maybe like 6-10 again, 7-9 at the best.
Yeah, it'll look like 6-10 probably.
Yeah, we'll have to wait till we get to the schedule and we'll see what he says there. All right, so thanks for joining us. Tomorrow, the 14th-ranked New York Giants, slowly climbing our way back up into the contenders. So have a good night.